shove this thing right in the middle of my head. Let's do this. The Cult of Hockey podcast by the faithful and for the faithful. I'm David Staples of the Edmonton Journal, and I'm here tonight with Bruce McCurdy. Hey, Bruce.
Hey, David. How are you doing tonight?
Fantastic. How are you?
A little less than that. Oh, nonplussed tonight. I'm not a fan of the Avalanche, and I'm not a fan of pissing away games, David.
I'm not a fan of that, but it was a hell of a game.
It was
and
a good
I actually
game.
As everyone who listens to this podcast know, I hate a lot of teams, mm-hmm. but I admire the Avs, Bruce. I just can't bring myself to hate a team with Cale Makar and Nathan MacKinnon. They are such fantastic players. They're Canadians. They're going to be on Team Canada one day. So, I admire the Avs. They are a great hockey team, and they play a very appealing style of hockey. They run and gun. They attack. They're fast. They're skilled. Bruce, what's not to like with the Avs?
They swept Edmonton in the conference finals in the 2 years ago, and I developed a mad on for a few of their players, including MacKinnon, I have to say. I admire Makar. MacKinnon kind of gets
my goal.
He's a fabulous player.
And yeah, I know. Yeah.
No mistake in that.
Yeah, he is dirty. He's a tough, dirty player. But so are a lot of my favorite players. So anyway, maybe I'll learn to hate him like you, Bruce. Maybe I'll be a better Oilers fan.
They keep beating the Oilers in overtime.
Over
and over again.
Bruce, this is our Two Good Things, Two Bad Things, Two Numbers podcast. And I think we decided I'm going first because I'm talking about the Oilers' first goal of the game. And the Oilers, the grade A shots in this game were 18-14 for the Avs. But the subset of five alarm shots, we had it as 8-5 for the Oilers. So the Oilers had the better of the very best shots, but the Avs had more of the good shots. So this was a very even game with lots of great shots on net and some spectacular goaltending by Skinner and Alexander Georgiev. The Oilers were behind this game 1-0 heading into the third period, and it was kind of worrisome because the Oilers were getting their chances, but Georgiev was just so good. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden you got the Californian of all goals, the Californian. And it was, as we call it here at the Cult of Hockey, Bruce, it was just a fantastic play by Warren Fogle. First, the puck's coming around the boards, and he keeps it in along the boards at the blue line and charges down the wing and hammers a really hard shot from outside. And there's a rebound, and the Avs defenseman, just all he can do is just shoot it away. And it goes to Evan Bouchard at the point, who immediately puts it on net, towards net, and Fogle's stuck around the net. He gets a stick on it and puts a very difficult tip shot past Georgiev to tie the game at 1-1. It was a fantastic play all around by Warren Fogle, his career-high 16th goal.
Mm-hmm.
Bruce, he's become... Him and McLeod, the Oilers have two really solid second-line wingers, if you ask me, in him and Ryan McLeod. To me, that question's been answered. The Oilers have those players. We'll see how the third-line guys, Kane and Brown, do, and the fourth-line guys, it was Perry and Janmark tonight. But Fogle and McLeod present a ton of difficulty for the opposition because they're big, fast, and skilled, and they're both playing the best hockey of their NHL careers right now. That play typified it for Warren Fogle.
Yeah, and a tiny shout out to Ryan McLeod, who he helped to force the turnover by pressuring the guy, and the guy just sort of had to clear it away from the front of the net, and he wound up dumping it straight to Bouchard on the point because he didn't have time to take up the puck and make a play with it. He just got rid of it because McLeod was kind of all over him. But certainly the main play was a good outside shot by Bouchard, but the main play was actually Fogle keeping it at the blue line. I thought that was a terrific play by number 37, and then he followed through by going to the net.
Indeed. Just
3 or so minutes after Edmonton had appeared to tie it on a goal that was called back for a distinct kicking motion.
Yes, you're allowed to kick the puck,
Zach Hyman,
for a pass, but not for a goal. So, and we'll be talking about that in a second. Bruce, it's your good thing.
Yeah, well, I'm going to go with the second goal. Surprise, surprise, given the order that we are doing things in. And specifically the play made by Corey Perry that helped set up the play when he appeared to get his stick kind of ripped out of his hands. Now, the Colorado guy might say he hooked him, or was it Manson? He was in the middle of it all night. And Perry's stick came out, and Perry's stick was still sort of flying through the air, and he was sort of looking at the referee for a call, but at the same time, he was controlling the puck behind the net, and with his skate, he kicked it out to Matthias Janmark, his winger on the play, and Janmark circled around to the top of the circle, and he fired one towards the net, and newcomer Sam Carrick was able to pounce on the loose puck right in the slot and pound it home for, I believe, his ninth of the season.
Yeah, his ninth
of the season. So not bad. I mean, obviously his first as an Oiler, and Perry had that puck in his glove before he even joined the celebrations, his first goal as an Oiler. But I thought Perry's play there, the way he kept his head and just thought, well, I got no stick, so I got two skates, I'll just pass the puck with one of them. And he made a, you know, he did what he intended to do. He kicked the guy to whom he wanted to kick it, and then he went to retrieve his stick. And from the chaos that followed all of that sequence, Carrick wound up alone in front and able to slam it in. So fourth line kind of goal, grind it out and get a bounce and bang it in.
What do you think, Carrick?
I have a mixed take on him, but I like some of the things he brings for sure. You know, and he was, let's see now, tonight, he played 8.5 minutes. That was his only shot. He had 3 hits, a block shot, 4 out of 9 on the dot. So, you know, mediocre, but, and he played a little bit of the one penalty killer. There's only two power plays in this game, one for each team, and both were killed off, and Carrick's shift was uneventful as far as I remember. Like, he's a low event player in the sense that there's probably not going to be a lot of goals scored while he's out there, but he's an event player who shows up on the event summary because of his hitting game and his play without the puck, which happens a lot when he's out there, I've noticed. The other team seems to have the puck a lot of the time. But it's too soon to form a hardened opinion on him, but I like some of what I see.
I think it's a little early, too, because his attributes may not be – he's not that big, he's not that fast, he's not that skilled, right? So he doesn't do any kind of obvious things that get your attention for a forward, but he might be really smart and really tough and really solid defensively.
He's definitely tough.
So I want to see – I really want to be able to gauge his defensive play in the defensive slot for a while. And same with Henrique. I'm actually have quite a strong first impression of Adam Henrique. I like his game quite a bit. I think he's a really smart and a highly skilled player. He's not fast, but you can already see his skill. And I think he's smart defensively. With Carrick, it's a little hard to tell. I mean, at this point, I prefer Derek Ryan in the lineup, but I can see why they're going to give Carrick a chance. We should know, Brute, that Vincent Desharnais got in a fight with Josh Manson and did not return to the game.
Right. He was on the bench but never played a minute in the
third period. So that's not a good sign at all. They've traded for Stecher, who is a right D, and they have an extremely capable young player in Bakersfield in Philip Broberg. So we'll see what happens there.
I mean, I suppose it's not totally impossible that Knobloch decided that you know, Desharnais missed the first few minutes. I don't know exactly what time he got out of the box, but it would have been at least 4.5 minutes into the third period. And they'd already by then established a 5-man rotation, and they just went with it for the rest of the period.
Had they scored by the time he got out of the penalty box? Do you recall? Maybe if they'd already scored to tie it, maybe he just wanted to keep that going.
Well,
too.
The goal was at 5:46, and the time that he was eligible to get out of the box was 4:25. So I don't know if there was a whistle in between. Right. It would be in the play-by-play, but I don't know that for sure.
Okay. Bruce, what's your bad thing? Are we going to go in order there, too?
Well, if yours is one of I the guess goals, we should go first.
We should go in order there too. My bad thing was the play of the third pairing of Cody Ceci and Brett Kulak. And usually in a recent post, I remarked on how Kulak has played an he's just had an excellent season. I mean, there had been talk a few months ago of maybe trading him to get cap space at the deadline, and we had mused about it. But as, you know, fairly quickly, it became obvious that that was just madness, that kind of idea, because of how well he was playing. But tonight was not his night, especially that first goal against Bruce. It was just one of those rush goals against where he made, I don't know, like he wasn't really even that close to making the play. They're breaking out with the puck. They get it to the neutral zone. It's a rush. He's back. Ceci's back. Everything's under control. Dreisaitl's back. Looks like nothing's going to happen. Three guys back. Three guys rushing. And then Kulak all of a sudden peels off and goes after the puck carrier in the neutral zone. He's not even close to making the play to getting him. And the pass is made Sean Walker. That made a hell of a good impression. Mm-hmm. He rushed into the open ice. Took the pass, went in, charged in fast, and made a great shot to beat Stuart Skinner. Dreisaitl was even with Walker, not by the time Walker broke into the zone.
Walker had inside position when he took the pass, and he kind of shrugged Leon off and got a step on him, and that was all he needed. He's pretty quick.
Hockey happens fast, and much less on Leon that one. Than on Kulak. Because Kulak, one of the other goals against that we're going to talk about. But Kulak, he had lots of time in hockey terms to make. He just made a veteran player made a really poor read. And it was the kind of read that we saw earlier in the year constantly as the Oilers were losing and digging themselves such a hole early in the year. Mm-hmm. And Kulak's hardly made that kind of mistake all year long.
That's right.
He made one there. So then he also allowed on the second goal, he also allowed the pass into the slot, but that was the least of that was one of the problems on the tying goal for the bad guys, but it definitely was one of them.
CC's weak pass up the wall was one of the problems on that goal too. The Oilers' failure to clear the puck about 30 times in the brief 3 minutes between 2-1 and 2-2. I must have screamed, get it out of here, about 8 times at my TV on 2 or 3 different sequences. I just could not get the damn puck over the blue line.
Cody Ceci, since the All-Star break, has not played well. And this was a really rough game for him as well. You may recall there was a penalty shot by Jonathan Drouin, and that was caused by Ceci. He's leading the attack, and he decides that he's Connor McDavid at the offensive blue line, and he tries to make a move, and the puck's stripped off of him. And there's a breakaway by Drouin. Because of it, Kulak's caught up ice on that one as well. And
Nuge, was it, that got the stick in there, and it was the right call?
Yeah, it was the right call. And I knew Skinner was going to save it. I had a really good feeling he was going to save it. But Cody Ceci was caught out on that play. He was caught out, as you mentioned, on the tying goal. He made a very weak clearance that kind of McDavid couldn't get to, and Dreisaitl was out of the zone. He had blown the zone. And they kept it in, and then they scored. And so that was on Ceci as well. Ceci made 4 major mistakes on grade A shots against at even strength, not one contribution 4, and Kulak was 0-3 in that same category. So these were poor games for both of these players. I mean, CeCe was close to, you know, getting a 2, but I settled on a 3 out of 10. But, you know, Bruce, yeah, you mentioned just before we came on, we were talking about this and like the Oilers being a little slow. And the owners do have some slow veteran players, and Cody Ceci at this point is kind of one of them. Like,
oh yeah, definitely.
Yeah, and I just think to beat the Avs, we're getting ahead of ourselves. We'll get to this in a second.
Yeah, okay.
This is our conundrum, Bruce. Yeah. What is your bad thing?
Yeah, I got a few, but I'm going to zero in on one, which was the game losing goal against, with 0.5 seconds left in overtime. And just to boil it down to the nub of it, I think that goal was scored because their number 29 played to the buzzer and our number 29 didn't.
Yeah.
And it's a simple, like, it was a nothing play. The puck was shot into the corner. MacKinnon went in after it. Bouchard took a real lousy angle to him, and MacKinnon just spun out on his backhand side. And he made a pass across the face of goal. And Arturi Lehkonen flat out beat Leon Draisaitl to the net. And Draisaitl was in good position, and he just sort of thought, oh, the clock's winding down, nothing's happening. Oh, it's in the net. Oh, there's still 0.5 seconds. Oh, we lost. And I hope he does the next. Oh, my fault. My bad. I owe you guys one, because that was, you know, to me, that's just unacceptable. You got to play to the buzzer. This game was 65 minutes and they played 64 minutes 59 and a half seconds, and they forgot to play the last half second. And it's just unbelievably frustrating. They had shut MacKinnon out. It was, his streak was over until that happened, and just kind of a gift here. Lehkonen's hustling and we're not hustling, and bam, that's the hockey game. And it's just not good enough. Leon, you're better than that.
Yeah. Bruce, there's two forwards on the ice who I don't trust defensively. There's Leon and there's Evander Kane. And in the last minute of the game, Kane made a bonehead play where they were, you know, Janmark's rushing it in, mm-hmm. and there's two Oilers on the attack. And then Kane just, you know, it's not an offensive play at all. There's nothing much happening. And Kane decides, oh, I'm going to charge in there too.
Behind
and
the
because
goal
he line. Does that, and against the Avs were constantly turning defensive stops into 3-on-2 rushes. They do it quicker than any other team in the NHL. They do it automatically. They do it like lightning, and they did it there, and they get a great shot on net with 30 seconds left because Evander Kane, instead of staying high in the zone, mm-hmm. like the third man, he moves in. Leon and Evander Kane are not trustworthy defenders, in my opinion. And they are such great players in so many ways, but they have those moments, both of them, where they go for offense and they give up on defense.
Well, in a 2-2 tie, or any score tie, in the last minute of regulation, there's four rules. Defense, 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 offense. You go for offense only if it's there, like the Avs did when the Oilers got three forwards caught deep in the offensive zone. But if you give up a goal in the last minute of the game, it's basically 1.5 standings points. And if you score one, it's half a standings point, because you would have had a 50% chance to get that point in overtime of the shootout anyway. You just cannot give up a game winner and the dying embers of regulation time. And that was just a horrible play by Kane. Like, what was he thinking? Like, he's a veteran. Doesn't he know, like, the Bettman point? And, you know, you just don't take chances in that situation, unnecessary chances. And becoming a third forward, going behind the icing line when your other two guys are all jamming around the crease, it's just, there's no reason for it. But there's also no reason, to get back to my bad thing, there's no reason for not skating. I mean, what I prefer to see with like 5 seconds left in a game is tackle the guy and take the friggin' penalty. Rather than give him a gift shot on net. And this is from a team who last Saturday in Buffalo twice with 2 seconds left in overtime. Once they gave up a goal, they got it gifted back to him on a cheesy offside call. And they celebrated by giving Buffalo another 25 bell chance with 2 seconds left in the second rendition of overtime. And they learned nothing. because this is the very next game that they got that's in overtime. Same damn thing. 2 seconds left. Oh, let's give them a free shot. Man. Hello. Wakey, wakey.
Yeah.
And they played hard. You know, this was a hard game.
It was. I mean, and Leon played
much
hard.
More of a, yeah, he did. And it makes it that much more of a piss off for Oilers fans to see a lazy play like that cost them a hockey game that the team worked so hard in. And I would imagine that there's a few guys on the team pretty upset. And I would dare say Leon is one of them because he's a proud guy. And I hope that he responds in a positive fashion because that's just not, it's not good enough.
I'm just hoping in the playoffs that they both make up their minds, like they're going to stop doing those things and stop and just play defense like they've never played it in their lives because they realize now that's the only way the Oilers will win the cup. So that's my hope. And we'll see if it happens, Bruce. My, running the numbers now, I think my number is Leon's just not numbers in the game. He had a really super high event game. Or not super high event game. So on grade A shots at even strength, Bruce, he helped create 7 grade A shots at even strength, which is a remarkable number. He had a really solid night on the tack. He sent in Nugent overtime with a very, he won the battle on the board, sent in Nuge. He earlier in the game, he had made a brilliant pass, backhand pass, to set up Fogle at the side of the net for a 5-alarm shot. But there was the defensive mistake. So another of his numbers is -3 on goals at even strength. And he made mistakes on every one of those plays. We already went over the first. We've been over all 3 of them. He was the -3 was an earned -3. Yeah. Often it isn't, especially for a forward. But he earned it.
Earned a couple at the other end, but those didn't come. But in the meantime, the defensive lapses wound up in goal lights.
Yeah. And the final number that I will focus on with Leon is 14-7 in the faceoff circle. Mm-hmm. So, you know, there is some, I think you mentioned his ice time,
23-53 altogether.
Oh, mine's not updated yet for some reason. Let me just hit the update button.
Sometimes they update and they change it after the game sometimes. So mine might be
23-53. Yeah, it's 23-53.
So 27 shifts. Yeah.
Yeah. Go ahead. Sorry.
Yeah. Well, his event summary, all of the columns have an entry in it, which is a high event game of different kind. 4 shots. One that was blocked, one that he missed the net, 4 hits, 1 giveaway, 2 takeaways, a block shot. And as you mentioned, 14 out of 21 for 67% on the dot. Like he was all over this game. But his defensive lapses are basically the story at the end of it. It's sad to say, but you got to get that part of the game going. You want to be Anze Kopitar? Play 200 feet for 65:00 minutes if need be.
Yeah, Kopitar does. He's a solid defensive player.
I want to be Alexander Barkov. Play 200 feet for 65:00 minutes if you need be, not 64:59.
Indeed. Bruce, what's your number?
Now, I'm going to go with a lousy set of possession numbers from the Oilers' third line. This is greatly concerning to me in a matchup like this because Colorado's 3 deep in lines and Edmonton needs to be 2. And I'm just going to do shots on goal and high dangers. Adam Henrique, this is from Natural Stat Trick, of course, and their high dangers and our grade A's are not the same thing, but there's considerable overlap. Anyway, shots with Adam Henrique on the ice, 2-4-15 against. Evander Kane, 2-4-15 against. Connor Brown, 1-4-13 against. And then the grade A or high danger chances, which I think are shot attempts from good places, for Henrique, 1-4-13 against.
What? 13?
1-4-12 against. And for Brown, 1-4-8 against. It's like awful, awful. Now, could say that those are some of those shots probably weren't on net, probably weren't just obviously the fault of the forwards, because we didn't particularly.
Well, Kane was minus two. Like, he made two mistakes on grade A shots.
Right.
Henrique made not one, and Brown made not one. And Brown set up Kane for an absolutely great shot where he hit the crossbar. Mm-hmm. So
that wasn't, that was the one grade A or high danger chance for, I'm pretty sure. But the takeaway is the puck spent the entire time in Edmonton's end of the ice.
That's, I'll agree with that aspect of it.
Got to create something. You got to get the puck in the neutral zone. You got to get into their zone. You got to forecheck. You know, it's a 200-foot game, not a 60-foot game.
So three veteran players who've achieved a lot in the NHL could be a good line. Yep. Like, I know it's not a fast line.
I like it on paper.
But Kane and Brown aren't slow. Kane's not a slow player. He's not particularly agile, but he's not slow on a straight line, especially when he's going in on the attack. Brown is a fast enough player in both directions. He's fairly fast. He's above average skater, or at least average. Henrique is maybe a little slower, a bit below average, but like this should have the makings of a really good third line here. And we'll see if they can figure it out, because if they don't, well, let's move on to our conundrum here, Bruce. The conundrum is, how are the Oilers going to match up against these Avs in the playoffs? And the obvious issue is the one that you raised, is team speed. And I just get the feeling, Bruce, that if Edmonton doesn't integrate Philip Broberg and Dylan Holloway into their lineup for the playoffs against the Avs, that Oilers won't be able to keep up with the Avs. That they're going to have to take a chance and trust in a couple younger players who are really freaking fast, who can skate with the Avs and who can make plays, I think. They've got so many of these older veteran guys now who are gritty players. I like them, but you're going to need some more speed against the Avs. I'm convinced of that, and I really think Broberg and Holloway should be in the lineup against the Avs. I would take out CeCe at this point and put in Broberg, and I would take out, for Holloway, I'd take out Carrick and I'd put in Holloway. And what do you think?
Goal scoring hero Sam Carrick?
Yes, or I take out Perry. Carrick or Perry. Yeah. And I would go with, and I like Corey Perry's game just fine, but you know, or take out, I think Brown's going to be good by then. He's coming on. So for me, the obvious choices are Carrick and CeCe. Now that could change, but I just think Oilers need to be faster.
Yeah, well, bringing in youth is one way to introduce speed. If we're talking specifically about a playoff matchup against Colorado, which would most likely happen in round three, were it to happen at all, barring an Edmonton slide into a wild card spot and an earlier meeting up with the Avs, both teams are full of veterans. Neither team has any entry-level contracts on the team, right? That's what Broberg and Holloway are, is entry-level guys. The youngest skater on Colorado is Casey Mittelstadt, and he's 25 years old. And the second youngest skater is Cale Makar, and he's also 25 years old. And he's played, they both played over 300 NHL games, the youngest guys on their team. So, I mean, they're really strongly veteran. So the idea of bringing in younger speed is nice in theory, but you might be paying a different price for it against such a veteran lineup. I mean, in that sense, they are like the Oilers in that they've got really no, I think maybe their backup goalie is
when they won the cup though, Bruce, the Avs, you know, had young defensemen. Sometimes you just have to go with your young players. Yep. You got to take that chance. It is. I'm not saying it's not a gamble. It's a gamble to go with Holloway and Broberg, but I just think that's how you win. You have lots of really come on, McDavid is a veteran player. These are veteran players. Absolutely. All of their Nurse, Ekholm, they just got so many veteran players. Like, do they have to be everybody? I think you're going to need some speed. And this, we saw that tonight. Again and again and again, we saw the Avs take off on the Oilers, and the Oilers couldn't keep up. And, they were creating odd man rushes out of nothing because of their speed. You're going to need faster players. Now, and you might have to tell Holloway, don't take any chances. Play a defensive game. If you see an offense, if you get the puck, take it to the net. You know, keep it super simple. But anyway, that's where I sit right now. Is I agree with your assessment that the Avs are fast. They're, I mean, the Oilers are obviously really fast too. But and then the Oilers have some fast second line wingers in McLeod and Fogle now. But I would like to see Holloway out there, and I'd like to see Philip Broberg.
Yeah, well, they keep adding guys that can fly, like Miles Wood. You know, not a great player, but he brings speed to a depth line. Andrew Cogliano brings speed to a depth line, and it seems like there are guys flying around. And Sean Walker brings speed to the defense, as he showed a couple times tonight, jumping into the play and scoring goals, getting a breakaway in overtime, and nearly scoring a hat trick.
Yeah, another fast defenseman they just brought in, right? Like, he looked like he could move. Mm-hmm. So Broberg has got 23 points. And they moved out
a young defenseman in Bowen Byram and replaced him with a little more veteran guy, right?
I like Bowen Byram. Yeah, Broberg has 23 points in 36 games now in the AHL, and he's plus 14. So he's killing it down there, obviously. That's all the reports say, he's killing it. He's back from injury now. And, let them play. Let them keep playing, but bring them up in a few weeks if you can, and integrate them into the lineup, because Cody Ceci may not cut it, and Carrick may not cut it, and Corey Perry may not cut it. Like, Corey Perry is definitely a fourth line player now, and we saw tonight what he brings to it. He's such a smart gamer of a hockey player, but I just think, from what I've seen of Holloway this year, they need him in the lineup. They need that speed that he can bring. And I like him. I don't mind Holloway at center. I mean, I don't think he'll be the center. It'll be Ryan or Carrick on the fourth line, but I'd like to see Holloway with them. So, final thoughts, Bruce?
Back at him. Take your 1 point and move on.
Yeah.
And I think that tonight's loss makes the likelihood of Edmonton starting its potential Colorado series at home a lot less likely. That said, the home ice advantage hasn't seemed to mean a whole lot in this particular series. Edmonton's had more success at Denver than they have here in recent years against them, it seems to me.
91 points in 68 games, the Avs. Hmm. The Oilers, 84 points in 65 games.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're a scary team. There's lots of scary. Bruce, there are so many. There are lots of scary teams in the Western Conference. It is going to be a heck of a battle for the Oilers.
Yeah, every series. We're looking ahead to round three in the hypothetical. There's zero guarantee either team makes it that far, but it's certainly possible.
The two
Western powers, there's no doubt about that, but they're not the only two.
And injury is going to play a huge factor with both teams. So we'll see how that plays out as well. We have no idea what's going to be, how that's going to factor into things. All right, Bruce, well, let's leave it there tonight. Thanks for talking.
All right, thanks for listening, everyone.
And in the meantime, and in between times, this has been another edition of the Cult of Hockey podcast.